This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know the first part of this show is brought to you by Pertle and Howerton Automotive. They're at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, give them a call at 1-800-264-6800, toll-free. Or pull them up on the internet, PertleHowerton.com, or just take about a 20-25 minute drive from Murfreesboro to Shebaville. Before you get into downtown, it's on your left, go in, and I know they'll take care of you. We have a really, really great show today. We have one of the best known names in football anywhere in the Southeast and across the country, and everybody knows that that's the Majors family. And we have Larry on today, and I am so tickled to have you on today, Larry. I've been wanting you on for a long time, and you have such a long history of being in sports, being especially in football, growing up in a sports family. And when I saw you and ran into you the first time, well, I think it was a week or two ago at one of the MTSU basketball games, I knew exactly who you were as soon as I saw you. Now, that's almost never done.
Well, I really appreciate you asking me on this show. Things get a little quiet down there in Estill Springs. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I really enjoyed the lady basketball team. I really enjoy watching them play, and try to get down each year for a few games. Mm-hmm. And it was good to run into you and a lot of other Murfreesboro, Middle Tennessee people that I know.
Now tell me what it was like growing up in the Majors family, having a famous coach. Of course, he wasn't always famous when you were first getting started, but having that type of role model and then all the kids together, knowing how you guys are, that had to have been one of the most competitive families anywhere.
Well, first of all, I like to tell the people out there that listen that, yes, I really am a brother to John, Joe, Bill, and Bob, and Shirley Ann. I'm the one that people hadn't heard of, so I really do exist.
Now, that's not true.
it was very, very competitive. My daddy gets credit, and he deserves a lot of credit, but my mother doesn't get enough credit. My mother is one of the most competitive people I've ever been around, and we got a lot of that from her.
Did she carry that on to the boys?
Oh, my mother loved boys. She taught school for 30-something years. She was partial to boys. I kind of felt sorry for my sister because we got a lot more attention. Not that she didn't get taken care of, but anyway, it was very competitive. And for a long time, I felt like I was not competitive. I had three older brothers, and they were so good at what they did, and I was small in relation to their size. And then to make it worse, my brother Bob came along 8 years after me, and he was the biggest one in the bunch, and he was beating me in golf when I was 14. He was six, so I quit the game of golf.
Now, every one of you were very influential in sports, especially in football. And when your dad first started, that's one of the most interesting things, is how he got started in coaching and what an influence he made, especially in a smaller area that became known statewide and across the country.
Well, my daddy was a good high school athlete, and the people in Lynchburg, where he went to high school, Ward County, they call it now, he's still considered to be one of the best athletes to come out of that county. And he was a barber in Tullahoma during the war, and they had not had football. It dropped because of the war in Lynchburg in 42-43, and some of the teenagers wanted to get started again, and tried to make this too long a story. They didn't really pay a coach. Mm-hmm. Then, and In other words, it had to be a volunteer situation. And the businessman referred the principal, who was new, to go and talk to my daddy. So my daddy agreed to knock off work around 3:30 and come in and get a couple of hours he agreed to do. And so he was the only coach. He coached everything there in those 3 years he coached at Lynchburg in 1944, 1945, 1946, and that's how he got started in coaching.
That's amazing in itself, because coaching takes up a great deal of time, as you know it more than anybody else. And when you get involved in it just consumes your whole life. And there he was working without getting paid and then having to make money. I guess he was still barbering at that time.
Oh, yeah. He was primarily a barber first and a coach second. Yeah, that's correct. And even after he started coaching over at Deckard, when they had two high schools there, Deckard and Winchester, 2 miles apart, one at Winchester and a high school at Deckard as well. The principal over there paid him to come over. And so he commuted the last 2 years. They had two high schools. They combined in 2 years later in 1949. But that was the first paying job he had in coaching. But he continued to well, I should say, and when he went to Deckard, teaching and football became his primary job, and he barbered on Saturdays and all through the summers. Then from that point on,
you know, that's funny how things have evolved. Because now, if you're coaching and teaching, that's it. I mean, you don't have time for anything else, even your own family.
It's
year
round now, in high schools. Yes.
How was he able to manage that? Because he had such great teams, especially as he got on up into Huntland and places like that. And of course, I know he had a lot of talent right underneath his roof.
Well, it was a different time, and people—not just my family, but people. And all the communities, small communities in Tennessee, Middle Tennessee in particular, that I know about, they just knew how to manage. And my parents did different things to make money. We had 6 kids. And Daddy did a lot of things besides coaching and teaching. He was a surveyor. We always had a tobacco crop that children helped him put out and maintain. He also his mother still had the family farm, and so he had a small number of beef cattle and also some hogs, and we killed a hog or two every year and butchered cattle and put them in the locker over in Winchester, and we just got by doing different things. A couple of summers he mowed the highways for the state of Tennessee, and shared sheep as well.
He was a man for all seasons. Yeah. But how, when you're growing up with your mom and dad, did they influence each one of you towards sports? And How did they? I know that they were very supportive of you.
Yes, they were both very supportive in everything. And it might be surprising to know that my daddy never tried to tell us to play a sport. He was interested in sports, so he took us to the old Nashville Balls down Nashville.
To
the bigger towns like Tullahoma and Winchester and Fayetteville and Shelbyville to see softball games. And so we got interested just by going and watching the high school teams do things. And then, of course, when he started coaching, John was a sixth grader watching his team, all that together. But he never came out and threw a ball back and forth to us.
I'm surprised.
And never, because he was always working, even when he worked around the house. But he told us years later, he said, I observed y'all much more than what you realize I did, and seemed to always know what we were doing. Never could pull anything over either one of them, my parents. But if you ask him, if you had a question that you didn't understand about how to handle a glove, or if you ask him, then he would show you. But he wouldn't volunteer him. He wouldn't go. He didn't overcoach. He didn't go out there and say, "Hey, you don't need to do this. You're doing this, and y'all doing so." Mm-hmm. He believed in young people going out and learning things on their own, playing together, and not being interfered by adults.
Now, John, was he the first one to play for Shirley Majors, your dad?
Yeah, he's the oldest, so he was the first one to play.
Now, which school? Was that at Huntland?
Daddy went over to Huntland and started football there in 1949. Now, he drove back and forth each day from Lynchburg to Huntland. Mm-hmm. And the year he started football at Huntland, my brother John was a freshman football player at Lynchburg. Hmm. And so the two teams played against each other. But Brother John went over to Huntland and played at Huntland that year. And on the game Lynchburg won, John scored 13 out of the 19 points to beat Huntland 19-13. Daddy came home that night and said, my mother's name's Elizabeth. Said, "Elizabeth, I'm not going to go through this anymore. Next year we're going to move to Huntland. I'm going to have my boys playing for me, not against me."
Well, that was a good move.
Yeah, I think it was a good move. Yeah,
but at that time, with him being the coach there, yeah, he still wasn't allowed to bring his sons over there and play for him at that time.
Well, if he'd have taken John, as I understand it, that first year, he probably would have been in Ellsbury playing at another different school without moving. As a matter of fact, we had a little bit of difficulty with the next year, which was John's first year at Holland, which was his sophomore year. Mm-hmm. It started practice, and we still hadn't moved. The mother kept insisting Daddy to find a place, and they didn't have a house available. So this man had an old a rundown place that had two rooms up at the top that no running water, did have electricity. So we had a hot plate. And, well, this might be on borderline, but eight of us lived in two rooms. We still had, we lived in Lynchburg, one half of my mother's mother's house. And what we would do, we'd get up early from Lynchburg on Monday morning and drive to Huntland and stay 4 out of the 7 nights in Huntland, and then
sound legal to me.
Friday after the game, we'd go back to Lynchburg, spend Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights there. But that was only for football season. Once the football season was over, there was a man that had been repairing a house for us to rent, and then right before Thanksgiving, we moved in full time Huntland. Then
you guys were so strong in the fundamentals and seem to have talent in every area. I mean, we're not talking about jump running, throwing, the basics of what football is all about, but punting. I mean, you guys had everything. Now, you were talking about earlier that your dad didn't influence you, to play those. He had to work with you on those.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, for instance, John and Bill and Bob, mm-hmm, really enjoyed punting, and Joe and I didn't enjoy it. So mm-hmm, Joe and I didn't really become, I punted some because there were times when there was nobody else on the team to punt, but I never was a real punter, and Joe wasn't either. So those three guys, John and Bill and Bob, became good punters because they wanted to, and they would go to Daddy and say, "Daddy, show me how to punt." And mm-hmm, Daddy would show the fundamentals. Daddy knew fundamentals of all phases of the game really well, and he would show you how to hold the ball, how to drop it, and then how to step and to keep everything, all the motions correctly straight up through the ball, and not do all this crazy swinging your leg around and hooking them.
Well,
same way with throwing the ball. Joe loved to throw the ball, so Daddy showed him the fundamentals, and because he went and asked Daddy, "Show me how to throw the ball," and so Daddy showed it. And then, of course, all of the other brothers wanted to throw the ball, too.
Two of the things I remember, the reason I got into the punting is, I don't know, you probably remember it just like yesterday, the 1956 Tennessee-Georgia Tech
game.
Oh,
yeah, I was there.
And it was at that time, it was considered the greatest college football game of all time. And they were, what, 1-3? Or I can't remember exactly how they were rated.
2-3. Oklahoma's number one, Georgia Tech number two, Tennessee number three. It was seventh game of the year when they're playing 10 mm-hmm. games. So it's way up in season. And, gosh, it was just a wonderful game. You know, we got these big high scoring, they throw the ball up down the field. Nowadays, 48 to 45 games. That was a 6-0 game, one of the most exciting games I've ever seen. There was a lot of action to it without there being a lot of scoring, which I personally like.
One of the most famous plays in that game, though, was a punt. It was a quick kick.
Yeah, there was a lot of good punting in that game, and John and Bobby Gordon got the longest punt of the game, 70 something yards. It was second string tailback for Tennessee, and also what the Tennessee people forget that Georgia Tech had a great punter as well, and he got some great punts. And Coach Bowden White, Tennessee coach, and Coach Bobby Dodd, Georgia Tech coach, they were kicking the ball on third down a lot for field position.
Unheard of
now. Yeah, unheard of now. John had two really great punts that you mentioned I don't mind telling about. One of them, Georgia Tech kicked the ball dead. Johnny Minger was their great punter. And kicked the ball dead inside the five. And so Georgia Tech, first down, Wade Mitchell, their great quarterback and safety man, was playing 25 yards deep for the quick kick. So the first play, John ran an off tackle, single wing, off tackle to the weak side, and he picked up 16 yards. So Mitchell came up for the first down, so he came up the next play playing close. And then John called for a quick kick. Kind of, the teammates said, you know, they were startled that he
called. Johnny called it.
Yeah. He called the plays. They prepared, coaches prepared during the week, but Coach White had a confidence in John, and he the tailbacks called the plays. You had to. You couldn't send signals out. And a player for every team in college football called the plays in those days. So he called a quick kick and got a 68-yard kick and back Georgia Tech up. The other one was somewhere around midfield or maybe Tech's 40, and he kicked it dead on the 1-inch line, and the ball that last minute, instead of being nose toward the goal, if it had been nose toward the goal line, it had been in the end zone, and it turned sideways, and the official, I'll never forget, official had to get down on his knees and look to determine whether the ball was actually touching the line, and he proved that it was 1-inch. He threw his hands up at the crowd and the coaches, you know, showing the 1-inch from the goal line. So,
how long did it take to calm Coach Bobby Dodd?
Coach Dodd was a great man and a great coach, of course, but you didn't rattle Coach Dodd. He was he had that reputation as a player as well as a coach. Coach Dodd brought a folding chair out, and he sat in on a folding chair on the sidelines for the entire game. And he didn't do a whole lot of coaching. He did his coaching during the week, as did most of all those coaches. And he didn't get rattled. Every once in a while he'd get up and make a motion to one of his players. But I don't think that phased him. I think he had confidence in his team. I would like to say one more word, that my brother Bill, who was a senior in high school, was a prospect for Georgia Tech that day. And there were a number of us from Holland, a teammate of his, me, and my brother Bob, and my brother-in-law Tom Husband, who was also a prospect. We had the benches just outside the end zone on one of the ends of the field, and Tech had double safety on punts, and they did that crisscross in this big back whose brother later was on a great Mississippi team back when Billy Cannon, it was great games ahead. Oh, what was his name? My brother Bill said he's the best back he ever played against.
Better than Cannon?
Yeah. He said, Charlie Flowers. Flowers, older brother, was a big guy. Looked like he's around 6'3" or 4", weighed about 220. One of the few big backs.
Sound like cannon.
Coach Dodd ever had. Mm-hmm. And they did a crisscross and handed it to him, and he's running laterally on where we are. We could almost take three or four steps and reach out and grab it. Mm-hmm. And he got that ball, got that handoff, and he was running laterally across the end zone, and a Tennessee guy hit him in the end zone, but he was so powerful he got away and got back to the 2-yard line. Mm-hmm. And when they were in the huddle, and for a high school guy, 15 years old, and we could see them. I mean, they were no more than 3 or 4 yards from us because they were in the back of the huddle. Mm-hmm. And you could hear every word they were saying. And they were a little bit shook.
I bet they were.
Yeah.
Now, growing up.
Because Tennessee was ahead this late in the game. Tennessee was ahead.
I still remember that game just like it was yesterday. Some of those games just stand out. But you were so lucky to grow up underneath your dad there, who was a great coach, and you became almost coaches on the field when you played. I mean, you took that with you.
Well, we were schooled how to play all aspects of the game, and also schooled how to call plays, and we knew what he wanted, and we knew what he didn't want, and above all, he always called it the cardinal sin of football is to let a receiver get behind you, and that never happened to me in 9 years of football. I don't think it ever happened to any of my brothers. Maybe Bob. Bob's a little more reckless.
Now, you were the only one, I think, to play with him both in high school and in college, right?
That's correct.
You went with him to Swanee when he had all those great teams, of course, all the other the brothers went elsewhere.
Well, my four brothers played major college ball. I weighed 135 pounds. And I'd like to think it's because of my size. It probably is because of lack of ability, too, maybe. But I know that I didn't get any scholarship offers. Coach Dodd sent me a letter one time, and when I was in a forum, when I cheated and told him I was 10 pounds heavier than what I really was, and that wasn't enough either.
Well, you know, Johnny wasn't real big either.
No, he wasn't.
But I remember him coming over when we were playing in 1959, before he went over to the clinic boat, and he came and talked to us, and such a neat guy. I mean, he really was. But your dad, when you went to Swanee, did everything always go smooth when you were playing for him? And you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Let me take a quick break before we
afraid I do.
We want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, and he provides quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shevville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
I've got pesties, buzzing rodents running all through my house. Ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I'm overrun with pests, but you're gonna be sure, safe and secure. It's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
It's Thursday, January the 26th, and you're encouraged to give the gift of life today. Give blood at the Red Cross, right here in Murfreesboro. They're having a blood drive from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and the Red Cross is at 501 Memorial Boulevard, the former Chamber of Commerce location. In addition to the regular blood drive, they're also having an aphoresis drive. That blood drive going on until 6 o'clock tonight at the Red Cross. There are two GED classes for adults this evening, both at 6 o'clock. One's at the Patterson Community Center at 521 Mercury Boulevard. The other's over at the Family Learning Center at 607 Bridge Avenue. Child care is provided. For information, call 893-7439. And The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe opens tomorrow night and Saturday night at 7:30 and a Saturday matinee at 2 at the Swan Performing Arts Center at 1203 Park Avenue. For information, call 617-3784. And the 12th Annual Flute Festival is Saturday at MTSU. Registration begins at 8 o'clock in the Wright Music Building. That's this Saturday. Those are Good Neighbor events.
Stock up the fridge, pay down the bills, oh, buy some new work clothes.
Oh, the things you could do with some extra money, right? Well, if you make less than $49,000, maybe you have some waiting for you at the IRS.
You're kidding, right?
With the Earned Income Tax Credit, some working people get as much as $5,700 back when they file their taxes and claim the credit. See if you qualify at www.irs.gov/EITC.
Tune up the car, go to night school, fix these broken glasses, start a vegetable garden.
You can stop now.
I'd fix my computer. I'd upgrade it.
If you want to save money this year, now's the time to save even more at Sam's Club. From January 25th through 29th, all members will receive $650 in e-values. Instant additional savings plus members enjoy all year. $100 off a Vizio HD TV, $4 off Dunkin' Donuts coffee, $2 off Kleenex tissues, and much more. Want to save more every day? Become a Plus member and make the most of your membership with e-values all year. Sam's Club, savings made simple. Supplies are limited and may not be available in all clubs. One item per membership, no rain check.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Health Care, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
Weather-eye.
Cloudy this afternoon with showers and isolated thunderstorms. Temperatures hold fairly steady. Cloudy tonight with areas of light rain, a low near 39. Becoming sunny on Friday, high near 51. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 61.
The Todd's Complete Auto Care on Southeast Broad Street. We now have a European specialist on staff. Now you don't have to go to the dealer for service and repair on Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, Jaguar, and other Europeans. From oil changes to engine work, we can take care of it on foreign, domestic, and European vehicles. 962-9050.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back with Larry Majors, and want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection, 2568 South Church Street. That's beside Gateway Tire Center in the strip mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministries and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. They have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And I guarantee you, if they got some from the Majors family over there, I'm going to rush over. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today, the Gold and Coin Connection, at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. And they now have a new location. They have a second store at 5631 New Nashville Highway. 5631 New Nashville Highway. Okay, Larry, we were talking about when you were playing for your dad at Swanee, and he got a little aggravated with you.
That's saying it mildly, I guess. My daddy challenged every player, regardless of the first year for sure, and most time the second year as well. I tell a little story to make the point. There's a guy named Sammy Gill, who's a dentist in Chattanooga. He and I are the same age. And Sammy was a real confident guy and a very good player and a great individual. And Daddy felt like he had to take a little starch out of Sammy. So he rode Sammy and me pretty doggone strong there. And when after the first two-day practice, Sammy's senior year, he told everybody, go in. So Sam, wait up a minute, I want to talk with you. So they made us run onto the field from the dressing room and from the field to the dressing room. Mm-hmm. We ran everywhere we went.
Right.
So all the rest of the teams run in. He said, Sam, you don't have to run in. I'm going to talk to you. So they're walking in. And Sam told me this later. He's got his arm around Sam. Sam's about my size, over my height. We're both about 5'6", 5'7". He said, Sam, it's going to be different this year. Said, I'm not going to be fussing at you this year. He said, I don't fuss at seniors. If they hadn't learned it by the time they're seniors, they're never going to learn it. And so I'm not going to be fussing on you. He said, I feel like that if I don't have all the freshmen and most sophomores hate my guts, then I'm not doing a good job. And Sammy says, Coach, you're doing a great job because I hate your guts. And Daddy just laughed at that. But anyway, my first 2 years.
Sounds so familiar, doesn't it, Newt?
Yeah, and my first 2 years in high school. Mm-hmm. And then he got the job at Swanee, and was under someone else. And then I went up postgraduate at Swanee Military Academy. So he coached 3 years at Swanee when I got up there. And I was a tailback, but not really, because I couldn't throw the football. So there really wasn't a place for me. So I ended up playing wing back and tailback both, just because they trying to find some place. But anyway, my first 2 years in particular, I believe if I'd had another home to go to, I probably would have quit. he was a very fair man. And he knew me, and I was the kind of guy that on my own, I just work up to a certain level, and he knew that. And so he charged me. He would get on me, and I deserved it every bit. And my junior year, I became a starter, and by that time I realized, I'm my own worst enemy. I'm going to have to conform to this man, what he wants, I was really kind of resistant first couple of years, and I don't
made it harder being your dad.
Made it hard on him, probably more than it did me. But anyway, my senior year we went undefeated. And I was a alternate captain and a starter, and wing back on offense and cornerback on defense. And we were winning. I thought I was pretty good, deceiving myself. And we were playing out at north of Dallas at Austin College, and it was 103 degrees. And I was giving into the heat. It's nothing. And they were running this trap. I was playing right corner, and they had a split right there, and they run this off tackle trap. And they were sealing off the linebacker and the tackle and going all the way to me, the cornerback and the safety. And I felt like I was running in molasses, and I just seemed like I just couldn't get going. I was giving in that heat. And I was, as that big running back went by, I was scraping his shoulder pad and down his hip and his leg, and he was kept on going. And MLA knew, a great football player for us, playing safety, but hadn't make the tackle. And after about the second time he went by me, and I'm scraping down the guy's side, I see this guy named Dale Reich, who plays behind me on cornerback, coming out and wave for me to come out, and I knew he was coming in for me. And as we crossed each other, him going out to play and me to go to the sideline, he says, don't get mad at me, but your daddy told me to tell you to get your butt off the field. So I go over there. I'm shell-shocked, and he's comes up to me, and he had the kindest eye in the world when he was in good mood, but he had the meanest looking eye and a locked jaw when he got irritated. And he got up as close to me as he could and took his, of course, he could do things to me could do to other people. Mm-hmm. And he took his forefinger and he started punching me in the chest and pointing to the bench and saying, "You get your butt over there and sit down on that bench." All the players were up on the side, nobody on the bench. "You sit on that bench and you get ready to play some football." Well, I'm over there for a couple of minutes, just shell shocked. And finally, I get a thing about it, and I just get mad. And so I go up there and I get on the side of him so that when it's a punt, he's got to walk through me. Mm-hmm. As I just turn, when there's a punt, I just turned there, looked him in the eye, gave him the same mean-eyed look and lockjaw look. So after he had to walk around me four or five times, he said, "Are you ready to play some football?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, get in there and do something." Well, I'm not going into all this play and that play, but it's the best football game I ever played in my life. After the game is over, I'm still mad as a wet hornet, and I'm in there taking my uniform off, and he comes in the door, and he's got that lockjaw look, and he's coming right at me, and I'm thinking, "Yeah, just come on. You can get enough out there on the field. Just come on over here and give me some more." He comes over and he sticks out his hand and says, "I'm going to shake your hand.
Wow.
You played the heck out of that defense," and then turn around and walk on me. And I'm thinking, "Dadgum, you." Just when I thought I was, had a good reason to get mad at you, you pour cold water on it.
It's my understanding that he and Coach Lee Pate here in Murfreesboro had a great relationship and a great respect for each other.
I can say for sure that my daddy had a tremendous respect for Coach Pate. And he talked about Coach Pate a lot from time to time around me. And I was telling you earlier, so I'll just throw this out here real quick, that I remember, I'll never forget, the quarterfinals, I believe, down in Memphis, the state tournament. And Murfreesboro was playing hot shot teams up there at Kingsport, and they got these fancy long-legged warm-ups and the jacket warm-ups, and Mr. Pate's team down there, all black uniforms with the short pants and the regular uniform, but he didn't worry about warm-ups. He just go out there and play. Well, all these coaches saying, "Well, I believe Kingsport will probably beat these Murfreesboro team pretty handy." And I remember Dad saying, Daddy gave me a little grin and said, "You boys," said, if I was a betting man, I'd cover y'all." Said, "You just wait and see. Lee Pate will have these boys ready." And said, "Murfreesboro will win." Murfreesboro not only won that game, they won state championship that year.
You know, you have some interesting relationships that you've been able to maintain over the years. And one of our really, really good football players, Ray Thomas, his wife, Ernestine, it's my understanding, used to take care of you some. Is that correct?
The good gracious, I don't see how in the world they put up with me. I'd come in there unannounced over when Ray was coaching over at Austin Peay. I was single. I got a wonderful wife. I didn't meet her until I was 50-something years old. And so I didn't get married until I was 56. But, well, I wasn't a wild person, just that I was restless. I didn't like to, I didn't mind being by myself. But I don't want to be by myself all the time. So I'd go see friends and just jump in the car and take off. And they were wonderful to me, still are. And I could go in there and the Ernestine just laugh. I went in there one time. And, I was down to no underwear or anything. And I had this laundry bag full of my dirty clothes, and I said, "Well, I'll wash these things either going or coming somewhere. We go to wash it here." And she found out I had the my car. She said, "Bring that in here." She washed my clothes for me there one weekend. I went over there. They were just wonderful for me.
They're
good people.
You have and they had lunch with us today over at Demas's, and it was one of the most fun lunches that I have ever had. There wasn't one quiet moment in the whole, what were there, about an hour and a half. We had so many great people over there, and you were the life of the party because you've got so many stories and you know so many people, but you're still full of energy. I mean, just being around you, I can feel it.
Well, I feel pretty good. I've had a lot of I never had a heart attack, but I had a lot of operations. Medical science and it's great what they can do for a guy like me. Back to Ray, I met Ray in the Air National Guard. That's how we got to know, because we were both football coaches, me at the high school level and he at college. And the people at the Guard were really nice to let us make up our weekend duties after football's over. And we came in at the same time one time and became friends right off. But Ray, for most people know that Ray played tackle for Tennessee Tech. One of the best football games I ever saw was Thanksgiving Day down here at Murfreesboro. And Ray was a senior. It's 1959, and Middle Tennessee had the great Ray Purvis and the Bucky Pitts at the running backs. My gosh, Gene Windham at fullback and a lot of other good players. Middle Tennessee went undefeated with the Tangerine Bowl. Tech had a great season. And that game ended in a 21-21 tie, just a spectacular game. And I remember how Ray filled out that helmet. Just, I mean, he was very visible, the biggest guy on the field.
He and probably and, Jerry, was it Jerry Cruz? Was that his name? The big defensive end for middle. The guy was huge. Yeah.
Well, Ray, you know, I didn't know him, and I'd see him in uniform. I said, that's got to be the meanest guy in the world. But you get to know Ray. He's a he's a lovable guy. He's just a terrific guy.
He's absolutely a lot of fun. Now, you continued like your dad. You went into coaching, and it seemed like every one of you seemed to be aimed that way.
Well, three of us coached, John and my brother Bill, who had his career cut short, as everybody probably knows about that train wreck. And me, Joe became a lawyer and a lobbyist at the state legislature, and Bob became a businessman. Joe and Bob always said, I don't want 18, 22-year-old boys or young men determining my fate.
You know, maybe Joe, I can see a little bit, but I really thought Bobby would get into coaching,
too.
Because it seemed to be his life up until that point.
Yeah, I don't think he had any desire to be a coach, none whatsoever. No.
Did you kind of use some of your dad's techniques when you were coaching?
Yes, I think some of it became natural because I grew up in it, and at other times, a few times I was conscious. I remember some of the main basic things that I just said. Well, you know, this has to be presented to players. There are certain things that you want them to know, that these above all are important. And then I probably strayed away from some things, and got ideas from other coaches, and then also from seeing. I can tell you two quick stories on myself. So, bad coaching. I was head coach at Cumberland County High School at Crossville, 2 years, seasons of 68-69. And we had this little bitty guy named Donnie Wittenberg. And he was like a freshman. And by the time we got to Donnie, we had run out of the good helmets, and we had one of these old leather, Notre Dame leather.
Yes, I remember.
And poor old Donnie had to wear one of them. And we were working on pass defense, which I coached, particularly was important to me. And we were working on goal line defense. I had these two assistant coaches who were really great coaches. They'd been head coaches, Walter Jared, who was offensive coach, and C.W. Pimpton, a great defensive man. Coach defense, and they were in their 40s. I thought they were old, and I was 27 years old. And Donnie was like a dish rag. He's running out of cutting left, cutting right, and catching. Coach Jared was the quarterback, which made it worse. He was hitting old Donnie on those quick look-ins and quick outs, and they were scoring. I got disgusted and said, you guys – called everybody out. I said, you guys, if you let, this is terrible, and I apologized to Dunny many times. I said, here you are, you got a little Wittenberg over here, freshman, and he's beating you guys. If Wittenberg beats you, what do you think the opponents are going to do? I said, just go on in. And we're walking off, and Jared, in his wisdom of experience and all, said, Coach, if Wittenberg, he turned it around on me, said, if Wittenberg can do this against us, don't you think he can do it against our opponents? So we started playing Wittenberg. Nobody could stop him on the short pass. And the other bad coaching deal was we were playing Ray County over there the next year. Beat them 6-0. I was calling every play. And we had this guy named Mike Vaden who was really smart. He knew everybody's assignment on every play. And he could tell you what the defensive people are doing, any kind of stunt. And I should have listened to him more. This particular game is when I learned I should have listened to him. Well, I've been calling every play, and it was early fourth quarter. Finally, we stopped them on downs at the six-yard line. And I called timeout, and Vaden comes over, and he said, Coach, what do you want to run? I said, Vaden, I've called every play this game. I said, we haven't done any good. I said, you call the plays. That was a heck of a thing for a grown man to give a 16, 17-year-old guy the responsibility when you're inside your 10. But anyway, I thought, gosh, I haven't done anything. Vaden picked them apart for 94 yards with the only score of the night. Mm. And so I said, Mike, you're calling plays now.
Did he become a coach?
No, but he got a scholarship to the University of Chattanooga and played tight end over there. Had a great arm. I thought he could make it quarterback.
You know, we've had two robberies in that I can remember for the Heisman Trophy. One was Peyton Manning, and the other one was John Majors.
Well, you might throw in Hank Larsella there, too.
Oh, yeah, back in, what, 51? Is it 50 or 51?
And then Heath Shuler, we've had about four cases that we had four runner-ups. Yeah.
But Johnny was on an undefeated team, and he did everything. He ran, he passed, he punted. He
called plays and played safety man.
Yeah, and he was a complete package.
Yeah.
And then Horning playing for a team that was a losing team for Notre Dame. And I guess probably the only reason he beat him was he was from Notre Dame. And
I'm not going to get in and say who should have got it, but in Horning's defense, he was a great football player.
Yeah. He showed that when he went to Green Bay.
Yeah.
And evidently Lombardi saw the talent in him because he kind of built a lot of offense around him.
Well, they were playing at quarterback, and he did the same thing. Lombardi did the same thing with Paul Horning that he did with Frank Gifford. A lot of people don't realize that Lombardi was the offensive coordinator of the New York Giants before he went to the Green Bay, and he was as the offensive coach. He moved Frank Gifford from quarterback to halfback, and he did the same thing. See, Horning was quarterback at Green Bay until Lombardi went there, and he moved it. He did two things in the quarterback position. He moved Horning from the first team quarterback to first team running back, and put Low, what most people considered at that time, Lowly Bart Starr, who didn't even start his senior year at Alabama, was third team quarterback. A lot of people don't know that.
He's like a general on the field.
And he stopped Lombardi. His great coaching. He saw something in Starr and moved him to the first team quarterback and molded him.
Had a pretty good.
The reason I know about Starr is because my brother Joe got a scholarship to the University of Alabama before he transferred to Florida State, and he was a freshman. Starr was a senior. They had two guys that were seniors, Elmore, I can't think of his first name, and Starr, who had gone back and forth. Both of them been starters their first 2 years. Back and forth, and both were really good. And then J.B. Ewersworth came in there as the head coach of Alabama and put in the split T option, and they took a halfback. He'd been a halfback his freshman year, was a sophomore, started him ahead of Bart Starr and Albert Elmore.
Mm.
And Elmore was second string, and Starr was third string. Starr played enough to get a letter, but anyway, that I could get into.
We'll get into
coaching
a little bit more
on that deal.
We're going to take a quick break and let everybody know that this portion of the show is brought to you by At Home Care, 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're having trouble staying at home and you can't take care of all the normal duties at home, cleaning the house and cooking and all those other things that you have to do to stay home, give them a call. It's 713-4639, or pull them up on their internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. They'll come in 24/7, 7 days a week, and make sure that all the functions that have to be done in your home are taken care of, and they'll even run errands for you. So they'll make it all just a piece of cake.
Hello, my name is Lance Jenkins, candidate for property assessor. As your next property assessor, I will ensure that every property owner is treated fair and equally. I have over 17 years experience in the property assessor's office, serving from 1987 to 2004 as deputy assessor under former assessor Tommy Sanford. I would appreciate your vote for property assessor. Early voting, February 15th through February 28th. I am Lance Jenkins, and I approve this message, Lynn E. Jenkins, treasurer. Vote Lance Jenkins, property assessor.
It's time for the big game, and nothing goes better with football parties than smoked wings from Kirk & Burt's. There's a reason they've been voted the best smoked wings in the county for the past 5 years. Kirk & Burt's Smokehouse Grill on Kaysen Lane. Order those wings at 893-FOOD.
Be a hero for kids with cancer. Join Bald in the Borough's second annual St. Baldrick's event on March 16th at 4 p.m. located in Lanes, Trains, and Automobiles in Murfreesboro. You can be a part of the excitement, whether you shave your head, volunteer, or donate. You'll be giving hope to those kids fighting childhood cancers. Go to baldintheborough.com and see how you can be a hero too. Sponsored by Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Our WGNS Good Neighbor of the Day today is Jasmine, a cashier at the Kroger on Las Casas Pike. Someone wrote in and said she recently took the time to help a customer out, and she appreciated it. Jasmine, our Good Neighbor of the Day, will receive flowers from Ryan's Flower Shop. Join WGNS on Monday at the Farmer's Family Restaurant in Murfreesboro between Lifeway Christian Bookstore and Marty and Liz Shoes. Join WGNS for breakfast at 8 or join us for lunch at 11. Farmer's Family Restaurant, home of fresh seafood, steaks, ribs, fresh country vegetables, salads, and more. Farmer's Family Restaurant, between Lifeway Christian Bookstore and Marty and Liz Shoes off Old Fort Parkway. Join us on Monday for a special live remote from the restaurant.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
Welcome back with Larry Majors, and we were talking about your brother Joe, and he had a scholarship to Alabama.
Yeah, he played freshman, but back then, you know, freshman couldn't play varsity, so he played freshman year there. Went through the spring practice. They had hired Joe, Red Drew, was head coach when Joe was senior in high school, and his staff signed Joe, and then they fired Red Drew, and they brought in J.B. Ears Whitworth. And reason they tried to get Bryant, or Bear Bryant. Mm-hmm. He'd only finished 1 year at Texas A&M, and he turned it down because he said that he was obligated to get to A&M to program up before he could consider going anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So anyway, things weren't very good there under Coach Whitworth. They didn't win a game. They were 0-10 that year, and Joe told Eddie that he wasn't going back, that he didn't see any future there under Coach Whitworth. So Daddy said, well, Joe, if you hang around there, he's not going to make it, obviously, mm-hmm. and they'll bring in Bear Bryant. And Joe said, well, I'd love to play under Coach Bryant, but by the time they make that move, I'll be a senior or possibly even out. Mm-hmm. So I want to go somewhere else where I can get a chance to play in a good program. So he went to Florida State under Coach Nugent. Mm-hmm. Coach Nugent is the man that started the I formation.
Oh, wow.
And he ran the true I. All four backfield people were in a straight line from the quarterback, and then they had the man right behind the quarterback about 2 yards behind him, and he was strictly a blocker, like a blocking back in the single wing, and then a fullback and then tailback. And it was an interesting offense to watch.
It completely changed the game because you and all of us, we played under the single wing, which is basically a power formation, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You might have a few trick plays or reverses or run pass and those things, but you're probably your best player had to be at tailback. Of course, that hadn't changed. Yeah. It's pretty much the quarterback.
Well, quarterback and tailback.
But you don't have as many options with that.
But under the eye, the true eye, because there was no – well, their main offense was two tight ends. Mm-hmm. It was a power offense. Now, they had other sets where they would split an end out or one of the backs and still have an eye like they do today. But it was a power offense, mainly trapping and off-tackle. And so it was a similar thing in wing because it was a tight offense. Those days, almost everybody had a tight offense because the rules required people to play both ways. And you couldn't split a flanker and a split in and out and run them deep passes and then have to play both ways, play 50 minutes. It was just that'd be pretty ridiculous. You'd run them in the ground.
Do you think the reason that the scoring was so low back when we all played and maybe even back before us was because it was mostly a power game?
Yes. Most everybody, because in college football, most everybody, very few people, occasionally you'd see somebody put a split end out like Army did, the lonesome end. But most people ran two tight ends, a tight formation, no flanker, and had played both ways. And the other thing is, I've been very much against, every rule change nowadays is geared to help the offense to get more scoring because most people nowadays, they don't have patience to watch a good solid blocking and tackling there on that inside game, which I love. That's a game I like to watch. So back then you couldn't hold. You had to keep your hand in against your chest, and you could not grab a guy. And now the ground push and sling them down and everything else. But the tight formation and the blocking row combined held scoring down.
Now, there's a famous person from Rutherford County that you know very well. Used to be the district attorney here. And you guys kind of grew up in the same area. Now, he's kind of a sports guy, mostly golf, but I think he his family was pretty much interested in sports.
Oh, you're not talking about Guy Dodson.
That's the one, senior.
I know Guy Dodson real well. I still remember Guy. I don't know if he remembers Larry Majors or not.
Oh, yes, he does. In fact, I called him a minute ago.
Yeah. we kid each other last week. I said that. Guy... he and his family originally came from Huntland, where I went to school, is within probably less than 5 miles from.
Yeah, he told me what the town was, but I never
Lincoln
heard of
County.
It. Yeah,
and then right on the other side is a place called Elora, where he came from.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, they moved from Elora. The guy has the oldest brother, Buck, played high school football, basketball, and baseball with my oldest brother, John. And when they moved up to run on the farm outside of Winchester, Buck had a couple of years left in high school. Well, he would catch the train or whatever to get down to Huntland, finished up at Huntland, played two years under Daddy there, and 1 year with John. His brother was a great athlete, great tight end. Scored 60-something points as a tight end his senior year. And was a great basketball player, strong and good rebounder, bounced people off the boards. But his greatest sport, his and Guy's, and three brothers. Guy was the youngest, and the middle brother, Sammy, played pro baseball. And there, those days, all small towns and even communities that were not a town had a baseball
team. Oh, yes, it is.
And baseball was the sport. And all those guys, those Dotson guys, man, they could play that baseball now.
I tell you what, something else guy can do. He can get in a courtroom and play year round too.
He's one. Guy Dotson is a very smart man.
One of the brightest people I've ever known. I hate to tell him that on the radio.
If I thought he's listening, I wouldn't say that. But he got a great sense of humor and very clever. Whatever you come out with, he can get. He's got a knack of coming back. He's a great philosopher. He's got his own philosophy to some extent, but a good great friend of mine. I'm a godfather of his only daughter, Beth.
Yeah, Beth and I used to work together. Yeah, she's smart. She's just like him. Very smart.
Love Jenny, the mother. Yes. Who's passed away.
Yes.
Jenny lived there in Cowan. And I lived up the mountain just about 5 miles, and saw Jenny a lot. And she was in high school, and so when she and Guy got married and lived over here, I was in graduate school here, and I'd take naps and eat lunch and supper with them and stay all night with them. Coming through from Clarksville, I'd stop at their place and spend the night with the snow, and the snow would stop me, and all that kind of stuff, you know. Just wonderful folks.
We're going to have to leave. We've already run past. Zach's going to have a heart attack if we don't get back. But I just want to thank you for being on. This has been one of the most fun shows I've ever had. I mean, just being around you is just a pure joy. And I know we got an enormous amount of sports fans that listen to the show. So,
well,
this has been a treat.
I hope the people can understand what I was saying, because I have a reputation of being a mumbler.
Nope.
And but anyway, this is really a real joy and a really fun being here and talking with you. And while I was talking with you here, I forgot about people out there listening. I was just answering your question. And this is the second or third time I've been on radio in my whole life. And I've seen and heard my brother John many times.
Tell him you're taking over.
I wonder what it would be like to
tell John you're taking over. Yeah.
Well, he won't believe it. You'll have to tell him.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.
You folks out there, thank you for listening.
And we all say, Sally Kaysen Thomas, hi. You said you talked to her.
Yeah.
And see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Okay.